Abington Health supports WHYY and understands that a lung cancer diagnosis can turn your world upside down. Abington Health's lung cancer team is dedicated to putting your mind and your world at ease. With advanced diagnostics like endobronchial ultrasound and important treatment options like stereotactic body radiosurgery, plus minimally invasive surgery and genomic testing of tumor tissue, Abington Health can create a treatment plan just for you. Learn more at abingtonhealth.org.
More than 9 of 10 complaints registered against Philadelphia nursing homes were dismissed by the Pennsylvania Department of Health in the years 2012 to 2014. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Technically, reporter Tony Abraham took a closer look at the study compiled by Community Legal Services and joins me now with details. Good evening, Tony.
Hi, Dave.
Let's note you're not technically a reporter, but you work for Technically Philly and Technically Delaware.
That's right.
So let's talk first about the process by which complaints are registered.
Sure. So complaints can be made by a resident. They can be made by a resident's family members, ombudsman. They can even be made by nursing home staff. And they're reported directly to the Department of Health. The Department of Health gets those complaints and they decide whether or not they want to investigate. When the Department of Health investigates, they rule whether or not the complaint is substantiated, whether or not it's truthful. In 2012, there was a bulletin sent from the Department of Health to nursing home administrators across the state saying, let's downgrade our characterizations of harm in these complaints. So there's a spectrum of harm. And based off of that spectrum, the Department of Health rules whether or not there should be a violation or an enforcement imposed upon the nursing home. So that can go anywhere from potential for minimum harm to severe harm. The problem here is that the characterizations of harm are totally skewed.
Explain.
Sure. So, for example, in Philadelphia, from 46 nursing homes that we have here that are state-funded, the Department of Health ruled these following instances as having minimal harm. One instance was a resident setting her head on fire. Another was a nurse at a nursing home who forged a prescription for morphine and stole it from the patient she prescribed it to, gave it to another patient, and that patient had to be hospitalized.
And clearly listeners might instead think of those as egregious violations.
Right.
And have you heard from the Department of Health in terms of substantiating why they rated them accordingly?
We reached out to former Health Secretary Michael Wolff, called him twice, left messages on what we believe was his home phone number.
He served under then Governor Corbett.
He did. He did. And that's when all of this happened. Those calls were not returned. We did hear from current Secretary of Health, Karen Murphy, and the current Secretary of Health said all of this happened under the former administration.
And in fact, from your article, under a directive from the former administration.
Explained. That's correct. So the directive says it's sent from the Department of Health to nursing home administrators asking the nursing homes to not report certain events.
Now, has that directive been, if not rescinded, modified under the current administration?
Not that I'm aware, no.
Tony, what are some of the consequences when reporting is diminished, as you're seeing?
Because of the downgrading in the severity of harm, that has an effect on the way the department makes enforcements. And those enforcements can include monetary penalties, orders to retrain staff. In the worst case scenario, it's the closure of a facility. The Department of Health makes their enforcement data very open. It's on their homepage. And the number of enforcements have fallen dramatically since 2002. On the face of it, it looks like that means nursing homes are getting better. But we don't know the context of those numbers because we don't have a cumulative number for investigations and complaints.
Tony, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight to break down the numbers.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
That's Technically reporter Tony Abraham on NewsWorks Tonight. A new lease will mean a big wage increase for employees who work for contractors at Philadelphia International Airport. Details from WHYY's Tom McDonald.
Outside Philadelphia City Council's weekly meeting, workers who do everything from cleaning airplanes to pushing wheelchairs at the airport held a protest. They're looking for ways to enforce the city's existing living wage law. After several hours of closed-door negotiations, a deal was struck that airport CEO Mark Gale says is in the best interest of everyone.
We've had candid discussions with our stakeholders from the beginning, and I believe that it represents a good deal for the airport, for the city and for all the stakeholders involved.
Workers for airline subcontractors will begin receiving $12 an hour starting on July 1st, a major increase from the less than $8 they're currently being paid. Michael Minerva, a vice president at American Airlines, says the company will demand contractors honor the living wage law and will also not oppose workers joining a union.
We will not terminate an agreement with any of our contractors if their employees elect to organize. That's a new commitment that American and the other airlines are making.
Gabe Morgan of the Service Employees International Union says this won't stop the efforts to organize airport workers.
We don't believe that $12 an hour is a great place to stay forever. It's a great first step when you've been making $7.75. The workers are going to continue to organize at the airport until they get good working conditions and family-sustaining wages and the ability to take their kids to the doctors.
The workers gave council members a standing ovation for holding the proposed lease until they received the raise. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
As Republicans and the natural gas industry unite to beat back Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's severance tax proposal, here's something lawmakers in Harrisburg are not talking about. Companies building new pipelines to grow markets for Pennsylvania's natural gas don't have to pay local property taxes on those lines to counties, towns, and schools. State Impact Pennsylvania's Katie Culinary takes us to the banks of the Delaware River, where a new pipeline could mean millions of dollars each year in property taxes for towns in New Jersey, while Pennsylvania could be leaving millions of dollars on the table.
Our story begins in Delaware, not the state, but the little township in western New Jersey that stretches out from the banks of the Delaware River into rolling fields. Silos, big red barns, and horse farms dot the landscape. Jim Borders has lived here for 18 years.
Just a beautiful little gem of a township that represents what rural New Jersey used to be like.
Delaware Township is one of 27 communities along the main route of the proposed Penn East Pipeline, which would stretch more than 100 miles to bring natural gas from Pennsylvania to customers on the East Coast. The companies behind the project have promised local communities they'll reap the benefits of tax revenue for years to come. So what does this mean for a town like Delaware? On the second floor of the historic township building, tax assessor Michelle Trevigno crunches the numbers.
So a 6-mile, 36-inch pipeline, so I came up with an estimated tax value, which would be $383,359, of which the township will get a portion of that.
She makes a few taps on her calculator.
$54,231.
The rest of that annual haul will be split up among the schools, the county, and open space funds. So for Delaware, with an annual budget of about $4 million, is this a big number for the township?
It's significant. It's significant, yes.
That roughly $380,000 is for just 6 miles of new pipeline in one town. Based on last year's tax rates, the project could bring in more than $2 million for the New Jersey towns that lie in the Penn East Pipeline's path. But on the Pennsylvania side of the river, most local governments won't be seeing any new property tax revenue. Unlike New Jersey, Pennsylvania doesn't consider pipelines to be permanent property, like a factory building. Rather, the state treats pipelines like the equipment and machinery inside the factory, and those are not taxed.
Well, basically, we have no benefit whatsoever.
Joe Kulik is the manager of Durham Township in Bucks County. Durham looks a lot like Delaware Township, and its residents are fiercely proud of the town's history.
Last stop on the tour, Durham boat.
Kulik shows me a Durham boat, like the one that George Washington rode across the Delaware River.
This is obviously not the original boat George stood in, but it's a replica, exact replica.
Besides the river, big old barns, and rolling fields, here's another thing these two towns have in common. They don't want Penn East to come through, and they're making their case to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the agency that'll have final say sometime next year on whether the pipeline gets built. Back on the New Jersey side of the river, Jim Borders says most residents like him are willing to do without the new tax revenue. That's because Delaware Township has spent more than $8 million to preserve farmland from development, and some of those farms are in the path of the pipeline.
Other people are going to be making tons of money off of this, and we're going to have to put up with the disruption, and it's not going to be something that's really going to benefit the township or the way we want to keep this township, preserve it into the future.
Borders says Delaware Township is lucky it can afford to forego that revenue. It's in Hunterdon County, one of the wealthiest counties in the country. But if the pipeline is approved, will towns like Durham and PA get the short end of the stick? A State Impact Pennsylvania analysis found that if the state did collect property taxes on pipelines like New Jersey does, the 21 towns that sit over the PennEast pipeline could collect more than $4 million a year. That 1.5-mile stretch of pipe through Durham, that would bring in about $52,000 a year. Bear Creek Township in Luzerne County, they could see about $565,000 a year on about 10 miles of pipe. That's more than 80% of the town's annual budget. Backers of the PennEast pipeline say the local benefits go beyond property taxes. Pete Terranova heads up the consortium of companies behind the project.
The pipe is being built because it will reduce the cost of natural gas and electricity to eastern PA and New Jersey consumers.
PennEast also claims the project will employ thousands of workers who will pay millions in income taxes to both states. But Penn State economist Tim Kelsey says the benefits of pipelines for local communities are often overstated.
Overall, there's generally very little local economic impact of a new gas pipeline going through a community.
Kelsey says construction jobs are only temporary. Plus, like many companies working in Pennsylvania, PennEast is registered in the state of Delaware, which means it can take advantage of a loophole in state law and avoid paying the full amount on sales and corporate income taxes. Two state senators from Chester County are working on a bill that would place an impact fee on pipelines, similar to the one the state charges on natural gas drillers to help communities that host the wells. Republican State Senator John Rafferty, one of the bill's co-sponsors, says the pipeline building boom is putting new burdens on towns hours away from the nearest gas well.
We're going to be severely impacted here for years to come with installation of these lines.
In the meantime, companies like PennEast have tried to sweeten the pot by offering grants to communities along the pipeline's route. Durham Township applied for one and got a check in the mail for $5,000. Joe Kulik, the township manager, wants to use the money to help fix up Durham's 195-year-old grist mill.
We did some work, shoring it up, trying to keep it from collapsing. But these beams are just rotten.
And so this is why, when there's $5,000 to be had.
Yeah, look around you. You could easily spend $5,000, not even blinking an eye. Not blinking an eye.
The local ambulance squad recently applied for another grant. Kulik says it's better than nothing. Katie Colinari, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, a bill allowing students to opt out of Delaware's new standardized assessment test will head to the state Senate after clearing in committee this afternoon. The measure already passed in the state House. Delaware is giving the Smarter Balanced Exam for the first time this year. It's supposed to measure student progress on the Common Core state standards, but it's generated backlash from those who believe results will be used to punish teachers and schools. Philadelphia voters will fill three vacancies in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in a special election August 11th. The seats were held most recently by former Democratic State Representatives John Sabatina, Ron Waters, and Michelle Brownlee. Sabatina won a special election last month to fill Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack's Senate seat. Waters and Brownlee are on probation after pleading guilty this month to violating Pennsylvania's conflict of interest law. And in Delaware County on August 4th, voters will elect a state representative to replace Joe Hackett, who resigned his seat in April to return to serving as a police officer. 91 degrees, mostly clear skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:18. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Partly cloudy overnight. There's a chance of a stray shower. Low 73 degrees tomorrow. Hot and humid. High 92. To the weekend, Saturday, partly sunny with a 50% chance of showers. High 90 degrees. And Sunday, plenty of sunshine. High around 85. Still ahead, for a musical about parents and children, a community theater company goes to the source, putting moms and dads and their kids all on stage together.
What's happening there is absolutely art imitating life, imitating art.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Mount Cuba Center supports WHYY and offers special programming on the second Saturday of every month. with hands-on activities that take place amidst scenic landscapes that showcase diverse woodland wildflowers. Saturday, June 13th, features guided walks and home gardening workshops. Mount Cuba Center is a botanical garden located in Hokesson, Delaware, that promotes the conservation of native plants. More at mountcubacenter.org. That's mtcubacenter.org.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The clock is ticking on a $25,000 challenge. We only have until June 15th to receive 1,000 pledges. If we can reach this goal, an anonymous donor will give WHYY an additional $25,000 in memory of Hubert J.P. Schumacher. Every pledge counts, so we need to hear from you right now at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Starting Monday, Philadelphia's famed 123-year-old Reading Terminal Market will be guided by new general manager Anuj Gupta, who's stepping down as executive director of the Community Development Corporation, Mount Airy, USA. Anuj, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
So, Anuj, like a doctor, your first task, I presume, is to do no harm to this esteemed institution in Philadelphia. Having said that, there are revisions and ways to bring it even more into the modern age. Where do you start?
I mean, I think we're building from success, and that's a very fortunate place to start from. We have to figure out how to manage that success, frankly. One of the challenges is now simply crowd control. You come to the market on a Saturday and or Sunday afternoon, and it's bursting at the seams.
You're swept along by the tide.
That's right. That's right. And so for some folks, that can actually be a detraction. And we want to continue to encourage growth while making it a more manageable experience for all. So physically, there are things I think we might be able to do to improve that and manage the crowds better. There are assets outside of the building which during peak periods, for example, could possibly be utilized. Let's take Filbert Street, for example. You can imagine a Saturday afternoon when the market is kind of at its peak, and the crowd is able to spill out into Filbert Street, maybe use that for seating. Maybe there's some musicians out there. Maybe there's some other vendors out there. So I think there are ways to better manage that.
There's nothing like the uniqueness of the Reading Terminal Market. How do you assess competition?
So you're absolutely right. It is a very unique public institution. It has maintained a very fine balance in appealing to a variety of people at the same time. So the conventioneers and the tourists love it. The folks working in Center City love it as a place to dine. But everyday Philadelphians love it as a shopping destination as well. And it is that part of the market which I think separates it from many other public markets in the U.S. and simultaneously is under greatest threat. We do have competition coming right at our doorsteps. We have a organic grocery store coming to 11th and Market.
Also, the revision of the gallery space.
The revision of the gallery. Whole Foods is nearly complete with its sort of mega store that they're building in Fairmount. But if you compare the diversity, the quality, and the affordability of everything that's offered at Reading Terminal with all of those others, no one's going to beat us. And it's important to get that message out and, frankly, make the shopping experience more viable and more accessible for more Philadelphians.
And toward that end, I understand you're trying to bring 21st century technology to bear.
You can imagine a scenario whereby folks who want to shop at the market during the week, they don't necessarily live in Center City, but they can't physically take the time from their workplace to go over and get what they want. We should be able to leverage technology to get them their goods from the market without ever setting foot in it.
Though I might caution that shopping at the terminal is such a sensory experience. Sights, sounds, smells, and touches. I don't know if that can be replicated by making a click online.
There is nothing that beats the experience of being in the market itself. But if you know at the start of your day, well, I'd love to have some poultry to cook for dinner tonight, or I need produce, and you simply don't have time to get over there, that should not be an obstacle to shopping at the market.
Talk about vendor turnover at the market and the process of finding suitable replacements.
Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I think you have to look at is maintaining that balance between prepared kind of dining options and purveyors of fresh food. It's that balance that I believe separates this market from all others in the United States. So when an opening comes up, I think that's one of the first sort of decision points you have to look at. Then you get into, well, what gaps does the market have? For example, we don't have any Korean food, for example, and there's a lot of innovative things happening in Korean food in Philadelphia. Same within the fresh food purveyors. We don't necessarily have anyone that's specializing in gluten-free options, which is a big thing now in retail. So those are the types of things that you might look at, figuring out what gaps to fill.
Anuj Gupta, congratulations, bon appetit, and thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you.
Anuj Gupta, new general manager of the Reading Terminal Market as of Monday, stepping down as executive director of the Community Development Corporation, Mount Airy, USA. This weekend, a community theater company in Wynwood is staging a musical about the relationship between parents and children, starring parents and their children. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports the company is run by a parent and her child.
Actors! We are going to do a sound check. So
at the Bullet Theater at St. Joseph's University, director Tim Popp is wrangling 70 actors, about 90% of them children. Allegra Greenwalt is just 14 years old, and she's singing Ain't It Good from the musical Children of Eden. The musical tells two stories from the Old Testament, Adam and Eve and Noah's Ark, and spins them as the challenges of raising children. For example, God must temper his urge to both protect and to punish Adam and Eve.
For me, the show has always been about choices and parenting.
That's Mary Lee Newby. She's a member of the musical's orchestra, and her three kids are performing on stage.
There are these moments where there are these struggles between children and parents about, I'd like to choose and venture out on my own and what's beyond the waterfall, and parents saying, never mind what's beyond the waterfall, just do what I tell you to do. Being a parent, I can really relate to that.
Even at the producing level, the theater company, Wolf Performing Arts Center, is run by a parent, Bobby Wolf, and her daughter, Betsy Wolf Rain, who is the choreographer and program director.
What's happening there is absolutely art imitating life, imitating art.
That was not the intention, but it was inevitable. Bobby Wolf started the Wolf Performing Arts Center 10 years ago as a children's theater, which opened an invitation to their parents to also participate.
Wolfpack tends to attract the most incredible people who are, and I really mean it, it sounds so sappy, but I'm genuine. These are the most dedicated, passionate kids about theater, sensitive kids about each other, and the adults only add to it.
Wolf is starting to teach her second generation of talent as her theater kids are now having kids. The Bosman siblings, Zoe, Will, and Wesley, have performed in the Wolf Pack for years. Will, who's 12, says it brings the family together.
You know, we're in the wings together, we're backstage together, we can go over songs and dances with each other and stuff like that.
His big sister, Zoe, concurs.
Doing it all together is just really fun.
I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
What happens when you have a great idea, yet are unprepared for how others will embrace it? One Philly event planned for this weekend was almost ruined by its popularity. What was intended to be a casual Saturday afternoon taco bike tour among chorizo-loving friends has swept Philly media. Event planner Brandon Gussoni said he wasn't prepared for this year's fourth annual Tour de Taco, titled Straight Outta Chompton, to nearly quadruple in size.
When we started it 4 years ago, it was just, you know, 20 idiots riding around the city eating tacos all day.
But after Philly media outlets publicized the event, confirmed guests on Facebook reached almost 200 people within hours. Gussoni started to worry about how to pull off the potentially massive tour around the city, saying he was frustrated by some media outlets publicizing the event without speaking with him first.
Our only concern is that, like, just talk to the people who are doing it to see if they're interested in having it promoted.
And so now Gussoni says he has the event under control, as only some 75 people have actually pre-ordered tacos.
It's raining tacos from out of the sky.
That's all for tonight's show. Tacos. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight. All you can eat, lettuce and shells, cheese and meat. It's raining tacos. Yum, 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 yummy, yum.
Foundation supports WHYY. The Foundation offers charitable gift annuities, charitable remainder trusts, and pooled income funds. Talk to your financial advisor about how these income-generating and tax-saving tools can build resources for community organizations. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org. 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
Supporting WHYY, Pennsylvania Ballet, presenting Kegwin, Fonte, and Forsythe. This electrifying program features Larry Kegwin's Canvas, which explores the fusion of classical and contemporary. Set to music by Tom Willems, William Forsythe's The Second Detail is full of attitude, and Italian choreographer Niccolo Fonte presents world premiere Grace Action, featuring music by Philip Glass, June 11th to the 14th at Merriam Theater, 215-893-1999 or paballet.org.